Hello, I'm Andy Wright.
And I'm Sarah Nguyen. I am special guest starring on the podcast today.
Guest star. Yeah. I always said co-host, but star is star. Even, obviously it's much better.
Let my light shine, Andy. I like to sparkle. But I do have a Bacon number of 3, so I'm 3 degrees from Kevin Bacon, so I think I'm allowed to say star.
And that's because you have been in Animal Kingdom, is that right? You have an IMDb profile, so
I do.
I do not, which puts you 19 points above me in the podcast host scale, I think.
I want to know how many
the
points
pedometer,
there are.
I think it's called. I think there's 20. So we're here because to kick off season 2 of the podcast, and really there's only a second season because we've had such a break since the first lot of episodes.
I like how I think, well, you're about to introduce this as a 2018 wrap-up, aren't you?
We are going to wrap up 2018, yes.
Nice and on time, mid-Feb.
Yeah, just in time for Valentine's Day, which is tomorrow.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
anyway,
that's very relevant. So I thought it would be good. One, it would be really probably annoying if I was to do a whole wrap-up show, and maybe this might even be 2 episodes by the time we're done, on my own, because I think I do not have the voice for radio. And so what better to do than to get an IMDb famous co-host? And hopefully, Sarah might even do a few more, depending on how this one goes.
I have a lot of opinions, so.
And you're actually quite good friends with, very good friends, in fact, with one of our guests from the last season as well.
Yes. Jury's out on which one that is, though.
We should keep the listeners guessing.
Oh, we could do a poll.
Yes. We won't be able to do it live.
Actually, maybe the guests are all thinking, which one? Is it me?
Is it me?
I don't remember this girl, but anyway.
So, there is going to be a kind of order. I think we're covering most of the episodes we did, or at least most of the guests. But we're going to start off with episode 2 of the podcast, where it was very early days with me recording this podcast, and I managed to rope in Josie Young and Tina Victoria Afshar to do a podcast, and we managed to kind of stretch it out across 3 episodes, which was good because that meant it's a lot easier to, it's kind of being ahead of time and in terms of planning everything. But I really enjoyed it, and it was kind of interesting because it was my first time of using Anchor, and I'd been explaining to Josie and Tina over Facebook how great Anchor was. And so Josie was in the new Christopher Doyle office in Surry Hills, in like a cubby hole, I think, for kind of slightly better acoustics. And Tina was in her room, and I was here in the office at stream time.
I've got a great visual of Josie just curled up into a cubby hole.
I have the same visual as in Serial, where they go back and cover the Adnan Syed trial, and it's her name, Sarah, right? I think she records in a cupboard in the hotel room because of the acoustics. So yeah, I have that kind of look.
That's
myself.
That's the kind of girl Josie is.
Yes,
woman.
So we're gonna start. So basically, this review kind of picks up some of the best sort of highlights and snippets and the kind of nuggets, I guess, that people have talked about throughout the first season. And the first bit that I wanted to kind of rewind back to was. I'm not even sure this is exclusive to the creative industry, but it's Tina talking about the challenge of being a woman in the creative industry, and how it's quite easy to kind of be overlooked, ignored. Obviously, I cannot say that I've had this experience. I've witnessed it, but I can only guess that with you having woman bits, you would have experienced this.
Yeah, I think it is interesting because there's lots of factors I think that go into it. You know, one is just physical space. We're often shorter or we take up less physical space, so sometimes that does make a difference in terms of eye contact. I think there's also a culture of sort of celebrating extroversion and salesmanship and being the loud person. That is, like, I don't want to draw too many stereotypes here, but I think that is more common in male in males. It definitely has happened to me, and I've seen it happen as well. And when it does happen, it's kind of, sometimes it still takes me by surprise where I go, oh, wait, hang on a second. And then it feels like I have to be twice as loud. And being twice as loud has its downfalls as well, because you can be seen then as that loud, bossy, you know, overbearing type of woman. It feels sometimes like there's a lot of pitfalls. I don't have any solutions. I just know that that is an experience that I have also had.
I actually think so you'd have to go back and listen to the episode, I think, one of the other episodes, which we'll mention later actually, where a woman who we interviewed picked up the fact that, like, she's actually getting quite good now at picking people up on it and calling it out. And usually she gets quite a good response. Like, it's not a... people don't get quite defensive. They're actually a little bit horrified that they did it, and it's very subconscious. But it's until we kind of create the subconscious or get rid of that subconscious that we'll start to see some differences. So anyway, Tina does a really good job of kind of talking about some of the challenges of being a woman and what that's like in kind of meetings and dealing with clients.
What we should do, it's something that always comes up, and like, you'll walk out of the room, it's like, well, that was a meeting about strategy and all the females in the room are strategists and the male is a designer, and yet he gets looked at to like get approval. It's like this really weird subconscious thing that's inherent, and it's come from like past generations, and maybe the next 200 years will have faded. But I mean, to be a person in a room who isn't going to be talking with like a booming voice or is softly spoken, or it's just in their nature to not come across as masculine, it's very obvious that sometimes you can get disregarded, or you can say something and people will nod, but your word isn't gospel all the time.
So from here, I think Josie and Tina talked about the struggle and feeling unsure or feeling a little bit not ready to share vulnerability, and how to do that, and how to find a person or people that you can connect with on that level. And I think that is a common experience. I can only speak for myself, but I definitely know that once you sort of break that vulnerability barrier with someone, it becomes so much easier to actually be real. And as I've gotten older and sort of taken my defenses down a little bit, I have started being the first person to do that, because I think it's almost like it's a shortcut into connection. Not that you should shortcut that, but it kind of reminds people that you're vulnerable too. I kind of talked about this with another friend actually, about sharing and how sometimes you do that, and you kind of share something that's a bit personal or vulnerable, and then I feel like I'm an oversharer and the other person just looks at me strangely, like they don't have no idea what I'm talking about and they've never felt that way in their whole life.
Is this like the first person who says, I love you?
And then you're like, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, like you
and
too.
Like, oh, you're one of those people that just tells people that stuff. And she sort of laughed and told me, well, you know, they're missing out because they're, you know, oh, they're not feeling comfortable enough to share. And so when that happens to me, that's how she kind of frames it. Oh, that's pretty good. I mean, I'm just kind of used to people looking at me strangely when I sort of overshare these days. I mean, I could tell you all about everything. No, I won't. I'll stop now.
I mean, there are different types of struggles. I think there's the struggles that are always there, like the ones that are filled with insecurities and self-doubt and just negative feelings about yourself. That you may not want to share with other people just out of fear of showing a side of vulnerability. I mean, there is so much talk about vulnerability. It's like the first thing you want from someone else and the last thing you want to give anybody. But I feel from my own experiences, the main struggles in terms of being a creative and in the industry have come with just simply trying to figure out what kind of designer what kind of role I wanted and getting a job. Like, it's so weird to even say out loud that for like a good portion or 2 years of, you know, leaving university, it was a massive struggle to find a job. And not like, you know, being unemployed for 2 years, but like trying out different roles and none of them really working, or not really finding a fit in there. And then not really being able to say to anybody either, I can't seem to figure out where I sit within the creative community. I mean, it's funny that before we were talking about having resources that you can go to and talk to, but I think sometimes they can come with this shiny polish over them that, you know, it's filled with people who are already accomplished. Therefore, that's why they're on the panel and they're talking about their experiences.
But yeah, I think the important thing with struggling in general, and struggling as a creative, I think struggling as a creative is to have other kind of creatives to talk to about it. Sometimes when things are in your head, they seem way bigger and scarier than they really are. And when you say them out loud, you kind of like set them free in a way, and you realize it's okay and it's not all bad. And someone else may have been through a really similar situation. And even if they've had the complete opposite situation, it might kind of make you realize, okay, it is possible. And then, I mean, sometimes when you say things out loud as well, you realize the gravity of them and you realize they're actually way more scary than you thought, and it's fucking terrifying. But then at least you've said it to someone and they can be there to help you. I think just like the fact that you can talk about it to other people is really important. Like talking and normalizing the fact that people have insecurities and people are going through like tough times is really important. And just validating people's concerns, I think, is a really important thing.
So struggles and like putting yourself out there became a bit of a theme as we went through different kind of interviews, which was a bit of a challenge for me because I'm not great at putting myself out there and actually talking about feelings. And but for once, actually, I found talking to Kit Pelaskis super easy. And we had met each other before, but only briefly, and we did this kind of over the phone. And Kit is an amazing creative who kind of creates things that are handmade. She's published a book about that stuff, and like she sent me an awesome little Christmas. What would we call this? Hand. It's a hand, but it's all handmade out of paper, and it's nice. So if Kit, you're listening, it sits on my desk, and. In this episode, which is episode 8, we talk about a project that Kit started called the Real Talk Project, helping people talk about what they go through and to kind of overcome some of the challenges of trying to not worry too much about what other people might think, and actually just the reality of they're probably going through something similar anyway. And so Kit opened up about kind of putting herself out there, how she overcomes what other people might think. And it was a jolly good chat. it felt like we'd known each other for years. It was a good episode.
Mm. I think I just want, like, it's a difficult thing for me to put myself out there all the time, sharing these things and writing about them, because every time I do, it's like I'm exposing myself, some inner part of myself, to others to judge, I guess. So it's really scary, but it's been really good for me to shed that kind of like ego thing that can sometimes be festering there in the background. But yeah, I guess for the project, I just want to keep exploring different themes and topics, collaborate with others, and just try to spread more of an open dialogue about it, and in the hopes that others will start telling their own stories or feel more comfortable about being open about their feelings. I guess that's it.
Have you ever had, obviously we do want to encourage people to share those stories, but have you ever had a negative reaction to any of that stuff?
Not yet. I have had people that have ranted, like, but I think it was just because it seemed like it's a safe space for people to say whatever they want. So they would have sent me an email or like a DM or something like that, where they've just obviously had something on their chest about how something's going in their business or their brand, and they just really need to rant about it. Mm. And I say, do it. Like, I'm here to listen to you rant. But I haven't had anyone yet sort of say, oh, like, it's actually my greatest fear to get negative feedback and have someone say, oh, no one wants to hear about you. Feelings, Kit. That's like my greatest fear. So not yet. I often worry before I started speaking about my feelings, like in terms of design and feelings, that people were going to be like, oh yeah, she seems like she's got some issues. Like, let's not hire her. Or, yeah, you know, like, I think that's why nobody talks about it, or that it's been such an issue that there's not been a stigma around being open about mental health and feelings in our industry, because there's something that sort of like, if you feel things like that, or if you have those issues, that you, it's like, is it a sign of weakness? You want to be this like slick design machine that can like charge in, do the job, and like get all the praise and just like win all the awards and do a really, like, have a really awesome design output. You don't want to be that person that's like charging in as an employee being like, or like creeping in being like, oh, I'm kind of unsure, I'm like doubting myself right now, but I'm the one for the job, I swear, like, believe me, I can do it, but I just feel scared. Like, yeah, so I worry about that a lot, but it's too late now because it's on the internet.
Yeah, and in that episode, she talked a lot about burnout too, and how, I think she talked about how she felt she couldn't be open about that burnout feeling and not being able to produce for a certain amount of time. I guess with that, it's something that's been said so much, but we're so surrounded now by people's output. We can see it every day in our feeds and social media, and it's great because you're sharing and you're inspiring and you're connecting with people across the whole world, but at the same time it can also make you feel like you're going slower, or when you have to have a break or you have a slowdown, it sort of feels a bit more in your face.
I feel like it's becoming as well really common to talk about it in a good way and a bad way. So I remember last year at the design conference, I would say burnout was probably, if you had to create a word cloud of the design conference last year, burnout was pretty high up there. Mm. And so everyone has these stories of burnout. And I think that does like one of, well, it kind of does two things. One, it's good because it gives people the confidence to say, hey, I've struggled or I'm struggling and, you know, I think I've burnt out. But at the same time, does it also suggest that burnout is part of the creative life and you kind of have to go through it?
Yeah, there's definitely something in that. I mean, that feeling like, oh, I'm so busy, I've got so much on, you know, and people sort of, I think this came up in the mentally healthy results too, where that's a badge of honor, where yep. I'm so busy, I'm getting no sleep, I, you know, don't have any time to do this or that, and it's actually something that people are half proud of, or can be perceived that way at least.
I never talked to anyone about how I was feeling or how I was stressed or how sometimes I just woke up and didn't know what I was doing, and a lot of things that people probably do experience as creatives. And I just pushed so hard that one day I woke up and I was just completely burnt out and I could not make anything. And it was a bit of a shock. Obviously it's really crazy and scary to realize that you can't be creative and that's what you, the only thing you want to do in your life. And then I just was completely crippled by it for a long time, but I didn't tell anyone. I just let it sort of fester, and I was doing things like reposting Instagram pictures online from my more successful times, just pretending nothing was wrong. And it was just so awful. And I guess I wanted to talk about that in the conference because I feel like it's a place a lot of people may have been to before and they haven't known how to seek help or get out of it.
Yeah.
This is the part where she talks about the industry not being full of egotistical dicks.
But this is my favourite phrase in the whole season one.
Season one
can be summed up by the phrase egotistical dicks. Not that that was everyone we interviewed, far from it in fact, but what an awesome phrase.
Her intonation as well was pretty, it's just solid. Oh God, what was I about to talk about? Perfectionism and ego and wanting to appear like everything's perfect. And it feeds into your work and how much time you put into that work, because you always feel like it could be better and better and better, and done is never done. And so I feel like there's a link there between ego and burnout, and as creatives, because our work feels so personal, it can drive us to, you know, drive us to being able to
stop, yeah. Right? Like, it's yeah. it can always be better, and that's the thing. It's like always such a fine line. It can always be better, but you have to stop. You have to stop somewhere, and you have to put it out. And I feel like, because I think Kit talks a little bit here about social media as well, and because social media is literally there one minute and gone the next, I feel like hopefully we can start to get a little bit more forgiving of ourselves when it comes to what we put out in the world. But it's not always that easy.
Mm. That a lot of that you can get so wrapped up in ego-driven forms of validation, and ego-driven, I guess, views of what's acceptable and things like that. I mean, our industry can be very ego-driven, and I'm not saying like it's filled with egotistical dicks, but you know, like, as in you're an individual trying to make a name for yourself. Your brand is your name for a lot of people, and you're freelancing, so it is very all about you. And so you can get stuck in this ego bubble where things like that, you can fixate on them and they start to mean so much. But then you step back, and if you look at it from the outside, you know, a machine is dictating who sees or who doesn't see your posts. And so basically, I think I read one of my blog articles, but like, a machine essentially dictating your feelings. If you get fixated on stuff like and follows and all those analytics, which are all made up things that Facebook came up with to measure success, and we all are now like buying into them, and people have jobs where they get paid real money based off of these made up things. It's mind blowing, really.
Up next is the creative juggle, Charles, whose accent I love, mainly because if anyone has a Kiwi accent, it's almost like we're already friends. You don't know it yet, but we're already friends. The entire population of New Zealand is my friend.
So yes, this actually also, the creative juggle, is our most downloaded episode ever of the podcast.
Does that mean there's lots of jugglers around?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what really sparked this one. I know it's obviously with Charles from Love and Money. I know Love and Money have a great following and are definitely a business and agency that you should check out. And this episode was talking to Charles, having worked with Charles in the past, about how he is a completely different person to when I knew him. And so I've pulled a few of my kind of favorite bits from it. And this first part is around how the person I knew, who was rather unstructured and not great at routine, is now the opposite. And how he starts his day, how he runs his day is quite miraculous, actually, and I think definitely interesting. And so I think there's a lot of practical advice in this episode, which is why people loved it so much.
Yeah, I think routine, I may be the wrong person to talk about, because I have a great lack of routine in my mornings. They just sort of kind of come as they are. But
all of this is changing because your daughter just started school.
Yes.
So surely you're now going to have a little bit more routine.
I hope so. Yeah. At the moment, we're just kind of feeling our way through. But yeah, so I aspire to have a routine. So to hear someone who's gone from being unstructured and kind of unruly to having a routine that keeps him on track was really interesting for me. I might try. The only thing I have in my routine is my daily crossword, which I keep talking about.
You do like your crossword.
I do like it a lot. But yeah, that one ritual does keep me grounded. So yeah, maybe it can extend further.
So what I did was I started putting together a bit more of a daily routine for myself to kind of wake up to. I started getting up a little bit earlier, and I started just kind of tinkering, kind of a la Tim Ferriss, I guess, just kind of like figuring out what worked for me, what routines could I get into, what good habits could I build that would sort of put me in a really good mindset. And it became really infectious. You know, now 2 years later, I get up every morning at 5 o'clock. I have a lot of you know, I sleep in a really kind of particular way. I've put a lot of kind of work into that. I get up at 5. I have a routine that involves kind of coffee and stretching and a hot shower and a cold shower and all this kind of stuff. I meditate for sort of 20 minutes. I do an hour of kind of learning. I play half an hour of guitar. I get to a cafe at 7:30 and I do 2 half-hour blocks of work. And then really the rest of my day is actually kind of pretty structured out. By the time it gets to, mid-afternoon, things have kind of, you know, they've gotten a lot looser again. But I kind of treat that as a good thing. I think what's really awesome is what this has done for me, I suppose, this structure, is it hasn't kind of, it's not hyper rigid. It gives me like a nice kind of base or a sort of a scaffolding to work from. It helps me to, you know, build those good habits and train my thinking and my focus. You know, it allows me to kind of write checklists of things that I want to do for the day, but it also kind of gives me that flexibility. I know that the structure is going to break, that it'll bend at points and sometimes it'll go out the window altogether, but that's okay. So long as I kind of keep coming back to it and I've got that reference point, I find that habits get stronger and better rather than kind of worse and worse.
So I'm kind of quite envious now of how structured Charles become, because I definitely don't have that in my day. But something we talked a lot about was how hard we both worked at Interbrand back in the day and how hard we both worked. And I certainly remember 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. finishes. I remember another guy we worked with, Nick, was like in my kitchen till 4 a.m. one day working on a presentation. It's just nuts. Like, why? I have no idea why we did it. Apart from this kind of misguided sense of pride, which actually Charles does a really good job of talking about.
As I've said, and as you all know, there is a sense of pride in that, you know, yeah. Like, you know, it's this kind of hero complexy sort of, you know, ego driven thing. It was one of those kind of always on things. Even when if I was having a day off or whatever, I don't think I had really given myself the day off properly. I just had guilt when I wasn't at my computer, and then I'd sort of justify it by sort of saying, well, no, I should get a day off, but I hadn't fully allowed for myself to do one or the other. And so it was just, it really was kind of an always on mentality, but with way more alcohol and jet lag.
He then talks about this amazing 5-hour workday that he's got set up, which I can't wrap my head around it, but I know in principle it's a really great idea, because, you know, thinking about those late night presentations that Andy was talking about, I definitely did some of those and looked at my work the next morning and thought, what the fuck is this? This is junk. I must have been delirious. So we all know there's a tipping point, like there's a limit of just how creative you can be. And then on the other side, I know that when you're busy and you've got limited time, you actually can achieve more than what you think you can achieve. I can't just imagine it though. I'd love it. It sounds amazing. And I like, so much power to him making it work.
I think we should do a follow-up episode. So I'm actually going down to Melbourne in 2 weeks' time, and I think it would be great to go and talk to some of the team.
Yeah.
And do an episode with them of like the other side of it, because, you know, it's always, you can always tell the story of how things, and actually I think Charles told a really good story of how, like, he actually had to experiment. It took him 2 years to get to this point. But to speak to the people that went through the experiment would be pretty interesting.
Yeah. And now I'm just sort of thinking on my feet here, but I definitely, I think this is a lot of people too, you have that dip after lunch. So if you're working till 2:30, then actually if you actually eat after that, if you kind of snack in the morning and eat after that, it's not that much shorter than a full work day.
But also if you finish at 2:30 and you don't go to bed till 10:30, 11 o'clock, you're like getting another day.
Yeah.
It's 8 hours. You get another day back. Let's all try it. Anyway, before we try it, let's listen to how to do it.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. At the start of last year, I got quite inspired for a number of reasons. I'd read some stuff. I had a hunch, and I also wanted a bit of headspace. Got inspired to cut the workday down to. I think we initially tried a sort of 5-hour workday. My thought being, my kind of primary thought being that nobody really gets 8 hours of work out of most of their employees. I guess I realized that I am an anomaly because I can focus for longer than that. And that to expect that of other people is, I mean, it's a bit of a waste of time. You give somebody 8 hours worth of tasks, and even if you sit over their shoulder and make sure that they kind of don't go on Facebook or write texts or whatever, hang out on blogs, they're going to glaze over for a bit of that time. It's a long time to stare at a screen and have your brain working at capacity. So the idea instead, the sort of the experiment was, well, if we can cut down the amount of hours that we do, but we can spend a little bit more time organizing what it is that we need to do, and spend more time on process, and I guess that getting that blend of autonomy and structure correct, can we get more out of people and give them some of their day back? And would that have like a kind of a virtuous kind of cyclical effect where they would go out and spend more time, you know, relaxing or, you know, exercising or hanging out with friends or, you know, contemplating things by the fire, whatever, they would come back to work more inspired, more refreshed. There would be less of that burnout, would we ideally kind of be in a position where we don't kind of lose anything, but instead kind of gain something from being more structured and thoughtful about the way we work and ideally kind of working less. Mm-hmm. We gave it a go. In terms of like enforcing or passing on wisdom, it's not been that at all. It's been learning. I mean, it's been experimenting with things and trying it, getting as much feedback as I can out of everyone, getting people to kind of have input. A bit of a law of the land here is that there is no law of the land, or at least the laws of the land are subject to change. So we are kind of constantly evolving. We're constantly kind of working on these processes and the way that we work and the things that do work. And really my kind of pitch to my team is this is the idea that I think is best. I want you to try it. And then I want you to tell me if you don't think it works. And if you tell me that you don't think it works, I want you to tell me why. And then I want to work on some solutions. I can't promise that things will change, but I can promise that if I think it's a better idea, I'll do everything in my power to incorporate it or to fix it. And so in that regard, you know, the process has shifted and we've built on it. We now do from 8:30 in the morning till 2:30 or 2 o'clock is when we sort of start our half hour pack down routine. So we've extended it out very slightly because people felt that it was a little bit too short. We are doing the best work that we've ever done. We are more productive than we've ever been. And I don't think that that's a coincidence by any means.
I think that wraps it up for this episode, Andy. Is that right?
We should absolutely cut it short in spirit of a shorter workday. I think we should leave...
Make those packing up noises.
That's right. I think we should leave the rest of our review to next week. So stay tuned. Part two of the season one review of Never Not Creative is coming next week. Hope you enjoyed this one. Hope that means that you might, if you're new to the podcast, you might go and check out a few of the previous episodes. Next week, we're going to be reviewing some of our chats around internships.
Yes, I think we talk about paid parental leave as well and the future of the creative industry.
Oh, and the future of the creative industry and ACTA. So it's a good chance to do a recap of everything we discussed in 2018 and gives us a little bit of time as well to do a bit more planning for 2019. So stay tuned. If, as always, you want to follow us or you want to get in touch, take a look at the socials. So at NVR Not Creative. I'm also at ADWrighty, ADWRIGHTY. And Sarah, you're at?
Sarah Penguin, at Sarah Penguin. Sarah with an H on the end because I like to annoy people. And Nguyen is my surname, which is the most common Vietnamese name you'll find.
Or NGUYEN.
That's it.
There we go. Check out nevernotcreative.org. There's lots of events coming up. Try and get along to Thursday, the 21st of February. We'll be at the Dove and Olive in Surrey Hills talking about, for what it's worth, the value that we can bring to our clients and to businesses and to the world as part of the creative industry. I'll also be down in Melbourne on the 27th talking about the topic of internships at a Design Business Council event. And then there is also an event which is completely out of my comfort zone called the Self-Expression Assembly, which is coming up in Alexandria on March the 30th. And I am, don't come for me, come for much more interesting people like the lady who started a company for 80s retro sweat aerobics, another lady that teaches laughter yoga, a guy who is one of the leading queer directors, performers, and theatrical people, who's actually based in London but currently on tour in Australia. And lots of other very interesting people who are much more expressive than me. I'm not quite sure why I'm on the lineup, but it will be an amazing event. So yeah, check that one out. That's also promoted on the website at nevernotcreative.org. So we will see you in 1 week time. 1 week, that's correct. But one week's time is what I meant. And then we'll be into fortnightly episodes with lots of great guests coming up. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming, Sarah.
Well, yeah, it's my first go round, so
we'll see. We'll hear from you again next week.
We sure will. Okay.